Well, good afternoon, Juno. In about 20 seconds, it's going to be 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTLO News. Time for Juno Afternoon. Pat Moore, your host today. My guests include a couple of folks, Marianne Mills and Zachary Hosed, who are both with the Meals on Wheels program. We'll be talking about Southeast Senior Services a little bit. And keeping it in a senior tone, ARP has a new program called Earn to Say, which we're going to be talking to the Anchorage coordinator of that program, Ann Sechrist. And then there'll be Cynthia Nickerson will drop by to tell us about the Step Out Against Diabetes Fun Walk, which is coming up Saturday, starting at 9 a.m. in the Safeway parking lot. And it looks like the weather for that event is going to be a little bit rainy. We're looking at rain today, highs around 59, light winds, southeast 10 miles per hour, rain tonight, rain tomorrow, showers Wednesday, showers Thursday, and like that.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Scientists, health professionals, and Alaska Native people are focusing on health. The 15th International Congress on Circumpolar Health opened Monday in Fairbanks. KUAC's Emily Schwing reports.
A group of Native youth dancers from the Tanana Chiefs Conference in Fairbanks performed traditional dances to the fiddle music of well-known musician and elder Bill Stevens. During the opening ceremony of the 15th International Congress on Circumpolar Health, Stevens spoke about his personal experience.
Alcohol and drug abuse is very, you know, rampant all over the villages. And in 1967, I had my last drink and last cigarettes. The way I did it is through people. And then through recovery and all that.
The Congress brings together scientists and doctors from 15 countries, including all 9 Arctic nations, to discuss the latest in circumpolar health and medical research. Athabascan Elder Howard Luke gave the invocation. He told an audience of more than 200 people he appreciated their cooperative efforts to address indigenous health and culture in the far north.
My mother always telling me that you sit with her. Whether you know him or not, black or white or yellow, you sit down and share with them.
Alaska Senator Mark Begich also addressed the audience.
Talking about the health of people in the North, may it be suicide prevention or substance abuse or diabetes or all the unique health challenges we have here, as people discuss and see the Arctic and know more about it, these issues of health will be on the forefront.
More than 550 attendees are expected at the week-long conference, which meets every 3 years. They'll gather again in Finland in 2015. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing for National Native News.
The U.S. Department of Energy will run more groundwater tests at a site contaminated with uranium. The site on the Wind River Reservation was contaminated after the operation of a uranium mill in the 1960s. Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhurov reports.
After tailings were removed from the Riverton site, the DOE recommended that nature be permitted to flush the uranium out of the system, and the DOE would monitor progress by testing at established wells. However, the model used to assess progress did not take into account events like big storms, and a flood in June 2010 caused spikes in uranium levels. DOE's April Gill says the new testing, which will be a one-time event, will help update the model.
We want to just very precisely understand the contamination, where it is under the site, and how quickly it's moving.
Gill said that if the testing reveals something significant, the DOE may have to reconsider the natural flushing approach it uses as a management strategy. Meanwhile, Gill says that regular biannual testing has also been increased to 3 times a year due to concerns from stakeholders. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhurov.
A Duluth, Minnesota news director has resigned after his Facebook comments offend the Native American community. According to a statement on the website for Fox affiliate KQDS, Jason Vincent has resigned to take a new assignment. Last week, his posting said, "Add drunk, homeless Native American man to the list of animals that have wandered into my yard." During this week in 2011, 6 American Indian students from the University of North Dakota filed a lawsuit to prevent the use of the university's Fighting Sioux mascot and logo. The student said its use created a hostile environment on campus. Legislation had been passed mandating the use of the fighting Sioux. The law was later repealed. A judge has thrown out the lawsuit saying the fight appears to be over. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
And by the law firm of Sanosky Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 5 and a half minutes after 3. You're in tune with KTOO News. Pat Moore hosting today on Juneau Afternoon. My first two guests are here from the Meals on Wheels program and other things that make up the bevy of great services from Southeast Senior Services. Marianne Mills has been with the program for quite some time. She's here to introduce Zach Hosed, who is coming aboard to coordinate volunteers for particularly the Meals on Wheels program. Hi, folks.
Hi.
Hello.
So, Marianne, tell me about the wide range of what Southeast Senior Services offers.
Well, Southeast Senior Services is probably best known for our caravan transportation service here in the capital city. We also have a network of senior centers throughout the region, Yakutat, Angoon, Hoonah, Cake, Sitka, Craig Kwok, and Ketchikan, all over the region. We have senior centers which have meals at the senior center for people over 60, and then we also have home-delivered meals for seniors that are homebound. We also have our Bridge Adult Day program here in Juneau and care coordination services. We have a region-wide family caregiver support program. If there are any family members caring for older loved ones, the phone number is 463-6177, and they can give you any information about services for seniors or what kind of supports you might be able to get as you care for your older loved one. I'm sure I'm forgetting something, but those are the main services.
So
we have.
One of your big, or one of the efforts that is run a little bit differently than it is in many communities is you have an all-volunteer force for the Meals on Wheels program.
And Juneau and the other communities, our small bus drivers, they deliver the meals. In Juneau, because we have a larger population, we have a huge caravan fleet compared to the other communities, we had to separate the meal delivery service from the transportation service. And about 1992, around there, we developed a volunteer delivery system. And that's why Zach and his job is so important.
So, Zach, you're coming aboard having just recently graduated from UAS, you said?
I'll be graduating in December, hopefully.
Ah, okay. Well, let's not make it hopefully. Finish the class. So you're coming into this job with – do you have any experience with coordinating big volunteer forces or anything?
Minimal. I've been working in social services for about 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I worked at the university on a program called the Peer Advocacy. That was the wellness office. And in there, we organized a club of students that would put in volunteer work to help promote health and wellness on the campus. So in that position, I did coordinate some volunteer in that position.
And how many people have you been tasked to come up with? How many volunteers does it take to run our Meals on Wheels program here?
Right now, I think we have about maybe 50 volunteers total, and maybe about 25 to 35 that are on a regular basis, and about 5 or 10 subs that fill in when needed.
Is that adequate?
We're a little short, especially now in the summer. People travel a lot. People go fishing. Finding subs can be a challenge. And we do have a North Douglas route that we just started, and we are very much in need of people to do that one.
That anticipates my other question, which is, how have you set up the routes in the system? How many? How big is a route normally?
I'm just starting, and I'm sort of inheriting what was previously there. When I started, there were two Douglas routes. Since my 3 weeks, it's kind of gotten smaller, and I combined the two into one and then created a North Douglas route. Our biggest route at the moment has about 15 people on it. So it really varies. I think our smallest has three.
So in a vehicle, when the meals are being delivered, is there just one person who takes that route, or is it more than one person that works it?
Typically just one person.
Okay.
Sometimes a kid or someone else will tag along as well, but usually just one volunteer at a time.
Where do you pick up the meals? Where do they come from to get into the delivery driver's hands?
Most of the meals that are delivered in Douglas, downtown and Lemon Creek are picked up at the senior center.
Okay.
And the other meals the caravan takes out to the one of the churches out in the valley, and drivers pick them up from there and go to the valley and Auk Bay routes.
Okay, so prior to meal delivery time, a volunteer driver would go out to, say, where did you say the pickup point was on this side? Not Douglas?
The senior center.
The senior center. Okay, would go over there and they'd have the meals all ready to load up in the vehicle. Do you have to have any kind of license to do this, or you don't have to have a CDL or anything like that because you're not carrying people?
No, just a regular driver's license. The state does require us to have every volunteer have a background check.
Okay.
But other than that, nothing special.
Now, if someone wanted to volunteer to become a delivery person, how would they go about doing that?
They would call me at 463-6179 or drop in at Catholic Community Services and they could ask somebody there, or drop in the senior center and get more information there as well.
So Catholic Community Services is the overarching organization that has all of these senior programs under the Southeast
Senior
Services.
That's our nonprofit organization. And then within Catholic Community Service, there are three separate program divisions, and Southeast Senior Services is one of the program divisions.
What are the other two?
Hospice and Home Care of Juneau and Child Care and Family Resources.
Okay. And this whole structure operates on what kind of funding? Where does the money come from to run this program?
Anywhere and everywhere we can find it. Federal government, state government, local city governments, private foundations, contributions from the recipients of the services, donations from local citizens.
So how much of your job involves having to fundraise to keep the program alive?
Well, that's probably the most important part of my job is locating and maintaining the funding so we can then pay the staff and buy the food and buy the fuel or whatever. So, and what people don't realize is every time we accept a new grant or contract, there's a whole slew of regulations and requirements involved with each one of those. So part of my job is training staff to know what those requirements are and making sure we comply with them so we continue to get the funding so we can continue to provide the services.
How do you find seniors who need your services? Do you go out and actively seek them, or do they come to you, or how does that contact happen?
Well, there's a whole variety of ways. For the Meals on Wheels service, it could be a social worker. Say someone's being discharged from the hospital to home, the social work department would give us a call, make a referral. So it could be a referral from a professional. It could be a family member calling up, concerned about their older loved one. So it could be from the recipient end or another agency calling. And then also we do outreach in terms of publicity, like this event, for example. And also we do one-on-one outreach. If we see someone or know of someone in the community who could benefit from our services, we'll give them a call or pay them a visit.
Who's eligible? A senior?
That's a good question. For the senior meal programs and for the transportation programs, anybody who's age 60 and older is eligible, regardless of any other criteria, and that's because we receive funding from the Older Americans Act. So anyone in the United States who's age 60 and older is eligible for the meals and the rides. Yeah.
And if someone wants to take advantage of the ride program, how do they do that?
Well, they could give Caravan a call at 463-6194, and the staff there will tell them how it works. Or they can call our senior information office at 463-6177, and the staff there can also tell them how the Caravan works and help enroll them in the Caravan program, so when they need it, they'll already be in the computer and, you know, we'll know where they live, where to pick them up, and so forth.
And is there a charge for the Caravan rides?
Most of our meals and rides pretty much are free will donation basis. Uh-huh. And a lot of seniors ask, well, what do other people pay? Or they actually ask for some sort of a guideline. So our suggested donation for the Caravan is $5 a ride, but people can pay more or less or nothing at all. But we do depend on client contributions to help pay for the service.
In addition to the seeking that Zach is doing for volunteers to deliver meals through that program, do you have need for other volunteers in your programs?
Well, off the top of my head, the Meals on Wheels delivery system is, as far as Southeast Senior Services, that's our program. We're really the most dependent on volunteers. At the Senior Center, we can always use people who are interested in offering activities and especially health-oriented activities, if they want to offer like a yoga class or, you know, something that enhances the health of the seniors in our community. That's kind of what we're all about. Our mission is helping seniors maintain their health and independence and quality of life for as long as possible.
So if someone wants to lead a Tai Chi section or something like that, how would they go about letting you know that they're interested in doing that?
Well, if different communities, I don't know which communities are hearing this, but you call your manager in your local senior center and you'd let them know that you're interested in volunteering and offering activity at that senior center. So in Juneau, the manager is Carol at 463-6175, and you would give her a call. So.
Okay. Well, we have translators in Hoonah and Gustavus. And Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. So,
okay. Well, of those communities, the
those
only...
Those people are now
in
able
Hoonah,
to listen to us.
In yeah. Hoonah, we have a senior center. In Tina, the people in Hoonah know probably already that Tina is the manager there, so they would give Tina a call if they wanted to offer an activity.
Okay. Of course, our coverage range is fairly broad because we're also streaming on the Internet, so you may get calls asking where the senior center is in Germany. I'll refer them straight to you.
I should let you know that anywhere in Alaska, anyone in Alaska can call our toll-free Senior Information and Caregiver Resource Center number, which is 1-866-746-6177. I'll say that again. 1-866-746-6177. And the staff there could not only answer their questions, but they could actually transfer them to Zach or to Carol or to the Bridge program or wherever the person was interested.
Is there a website?
CCSJuno.org.
CCSJuno.org, and if you got on there, you could find your way through to the senior programs and like that. Okay. Zach, welcome aboard the staff. I hope you have good luck putting your volunteers together and arranging your routes.
Thank you.
It looks like a challenging position, to say the least, to keep this going on the basis that it has for many years. I think it's a very successful program. A lot of people take advantage of it. So, and Marianne, as always, it's wonderful talking with you about these things. Come by anytime.
Thank you.
Okay. A little appropriate food music to find our way out of here.
Can we bake? Can we bake?
22 minutes after 3 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News. My next guest on Juno Afternoon is coming to us from Anchorage. Ann Sechrist is here from AARP. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Pat.
How's the weather up in Anchorage?
Actually, a little better than it has been. We've had Juno-type weather here in the last couple days.
Oh, you mean sunny, warm,
yeah.
70s.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, Juno weather, I got it.
Yes.
What do you got for weather?
Oh, gosh. I think it's around 55, 59, some blue in the sky. So that's always a treat.
You have to explain that color. We're not familiar with it down here.
And there's this yellow globe type object in the sky. So I'll take a picture for you and Juno.
We can use identification. I'll talk to some astronomer friends and see what that object is.
Yeah, I'll send some graphics.
Well, enough fooling around. What is this You've Earned a Say program that I understand AARP is rolling out?
We started Earned a Say around March, and it's a wonderful national conversation and an engaging national conversation. It's really to take the debate about the future of Social Security and Medicare out from behind closed doors in Washington, D.C., into everyone's living room and kitchen. Our feeling is, my gosh, the number of Americans who have worked a lifetime and poured money, man, blood, sweat, and tears into the program, both programs. Our fellow Americans earned a right to have a say about the future of Medicare and Social Security. They've paid into these programs throughout their working lives. And we feel very strongly that if decisions are being made about these two important programs behind closed doors, that has to come out from behind closed doors, and Americans have that right to have a say about Medicare and Social Security.
So, Anne, what mechanism have you come up with to provide Americans a way of having an input?
We have a website, www.earnedasay.org, And there's really a lot of great information there. What AARP did is we went and sought some expert opinions. In Social Security, we sought the opinion of David John of the Heritage Foundation, as well as Virginia Reno of the National Academy of Social Insurance. And they put a kind of a pro and con spin on options. There are 12 different options that are feasible for Social Security's future. And conversely, under Medicare, the experts we sought, and we commissioned these experts, 15 options under Medicare, and we sought the opinions of Dr. Henry Aaron of the Brookings Institute, as well as Dr. Stuart Butler of the Heritage Foundation, and they laid out the options, the pros and cons of the changes that are feasible, are possible for changes to Medicare. So they're right there. There's no spin, there's no partisanship, they're just these experts that we engaged put it out there on the website for everyone to evaluate for themselves. And the reason we did this is we want people to read about the options and then compare it to the candidates who are running for office. Where do they stand? We want people to understand where the candidates stand before they vote for their candidate this November.
So this is something of a major national campaign. I'm wondering, can you give us an idea of what the impact of Social Security and Medicare is on the state of Alaska? And since I'm sitting in Juneau, can you kind of localize that down to Juneau for us?
Absolutely. Let's start with the state level here. Social Security and Medicare are definitely vital to Alaska seniors. Over 52,000 of Alaskan residents 65 and older received Social Security in Alaska, and their benefit was roughly about $13,500. That's not a lot, but to those individuals who receive it, it's everything. And Social Security accounted for about 37% of a typical older Alaskan's income, so it's very important. Social Security provided $1 billion of benefits to all Alaskans. And the other thing that's important about Medicare, it really does provide a peace of mind to Alaska seniors. Nearly 95 of older Alaska seniors, about 56,000, were enrolled in Medicare in 2011. And in Juneau, a couple years ago, we did a series. We took a look at every single census area just to see the impact of Social Security in each of the census areas. And what surprised us was to learn that roughly one-third of all the Social Security checks that came into every single area, one-third went to children, surviving spouses, or people with disabilities under the age of 65. So many people think Social Security is strictly a retirement program, but it's not. It's really vital to those who are disabled or survivors or children. And, in fact, one additional note, in most states, 8% of all Social Security recipients are children. But we found out that in Alaska, almost 12% of Social Security recipients are children. So Social Security is very vital to our children here in Alaska. Only Mississippi was the other state that was higher, so Alaska was second. In Juneau area, about 3,555 checks are received in the Juneau area each month. And 2,370 are retired workers. 210 are widows or widowers of the wage earner who died. 505 are disabled workers, and 115 are children of disabled workers. So Social Security is much more than a retirement check. It's really a family protection plan.
The The question that I think a lot of seniors struggle with is making the decision as to when, not if, since a lot of people are eligible, is when do you begin drawing it down? Is there some way, I know there's a calculation, I've seen some kind of graph where there's two lines that cross and that sort of thing. Is there some way to help people make those kinds of decisions? Does AARP have any help with that?
Actually, there is on our website, aarp.org, there is a calculator that would help individuals calculate that. It all, of course, depends on what you have in savings. There are so many variables about when you should start to draw. Of course, the longer you delay, the better shape you are in, of course, but it all depends on what you do for a living. There are some professions that would make it very difficult for you to delay retirement, say, into your 70s, say if you're in a very physical field, that would make it very difficult. I did want to share also with your audience, we did a survey of Alaskans of how they felt about the future of Social Security and Medicare, and I found it, and this is on our website too at earntosay.org. We asked how they felt about Social Security, and 49% said it either needs major changes or it is in a state of crisis. We asked the same question, how do Alaskans feel about Medicare? And 54% said it either needs major changes or is in a state of crisis. And the one question, there are five questions, and people can go on that website and review the entire questionnaire. The last question I found very, very interested, the question was, when it comes to changes being made to Social Security and Medicare in Washington, which of the following describes you the best? The choices were, I want my voice heard, or B, I want my voice heard, but I don't think it will make a difference, and C, I'm not interested in being involved. And overwhelmingly, majority of people went with B, I want my voice heard, but I don't think it will make a difference. And that's really sad. We want people to speak up. We want people to make their voice heard about Social Security and Medicare. We want engagement. We want people to say, I've earned a right. I've earned a say. And this is, by setting up this site, this is hopefully Alaskans will be able to have a say in the future of Social Security and Medicare.
And it's one thing to collect the opinions and ideas from people, but the question is then, how do you take this forward? How does this voice get to the policymakers?
That's a great question. We will be sharing the results of the survey with our members of Congress. We want them to know how Alaskans feel about Medicare and Social Security, how important it is. And we're encouraging individuals also to share directly with our members of Congress their opinion. We're going to be doing an event in Juneau on September 13th. We're working with Juneau Community Council Chair Liz Lucas, who is in Juneau as far as the finalization of the details. But we'll be getting out those invitations here this next couple weeks. But we're hoping, and it's open to the public. So we want everyone in Juneau to attend, and that will be September 13th, most likely in the evening. So, again, everyone is welcome to attend that. All the details will be on that invitation. We also have a book that's available for anyone who'd like it. It's called How Would You Strengthen Medicare? The other book is How Would You Strengthen Social Security? It's available at no charge. People can contact me at the AARP State Office toll-free at 1-866-227-7447. Again, that's 1-866-227-7447. And I'll pop that in the mail at anyone's request.
I guess one last question here, and that is, every time that we've had a presidential election or a congressional election for the last, within my memory at least, the subjects of Social Security and Medicare have come to the fore. Is there more danger to these programs at this point than there has been in the past?
I think it's more, today it's more important than ever before that we address these programs, simply because of the fact that we've got a whole cohort of individuals who are coming into the era of Medicare, where they're going to be needing Medicare. Between the year 2000 and 2030, the number of Medicare beneficiaries is going to double from 40 million to 80 million people. That is a reality that needs to be addressed, not by somebody who's only looking at the next election. It's got to be looked at realistically by the politicians today. So let's be realistic about what these programs mean. We talk about Social Security going broke. All right, then there are ways to fix it. Let's be realistic. We can fix the gap. We can fill the gap. How can we do that? Let's study the pros and cons. We can do it. It's a matter of being realistic and not, again, for our politicians to be only focused on the next election.
And thank you so much for bringing this program to our attention. Could you give us your contact information one more time so people know how to get onto the website and how to get to you if they want to?
Absolutely. For Earn to Say, that website is www.earntosay.org. And to get a hold of me, people can call me directly at 1-866-227-7447. Or my email is ak@aarp.org.
An easy email to remember. Thank you so much,
yes.
Anne. And I hope your weather improves up there.
Thank you, Pat. I'm sorry I got a catch in my throat. I think I'm getting so choked up about Earn to Say, but I feel really passionate about the fact we do need to intelligently address these important issues.
Well, it sounds like you're starting to gather enough information to actually be able to take something forward. Thank you again for alerting us to these programs.
Thank you, Pat, so much.
You bet.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 7th of August, 2012. It's the birthday of the Dutch dancer and alleged spy Mata Hari, born Margaretha Zelle in Leeuwarden in the Netherlands in 1876. She married an army officer, and the two of them lived in Java and Sumatra for a few years. That's where she picked up her by name, Mata Hari, which means sunrise. They were divorced. They came back to Holland in order to make some money. She started dancing professionally in Paris and sometimes worked in a brothel. She had apparently sold some outdated information about France to the Germans in 1916, then later made a deal with the head of French intelligence to spy on the Germans in exchange for a pass to go to the Eastern War Zone and visit her Russian lover. But the French became suspicious that she was a double agent, and she was tried, convicted, and executed by firing squad in 1917, though one of her prosecutors later said there wasn't enough evidence against her to flog a cat. It was on this date, 1947, the raft Contiki finished its successful voyage from Peru to French Polynesia, a craft piloted by a Norwegian ethnologist named Thor Heyerdahl, was out to prove that early South Americans could have traveled across the Pacific and settled in the Polynesian islands. So he made his raft of pre-Columbian materials, balsa logs lashed together with hemp ropes, a cabin made of bamboo with a thatched roof of banana leaves. It made the trip in 3.5 months, and Thor Heyerdahl wrote a best-selling book about it, The Contiki Expedition. It's the birthday of Anne Fadiman, New York City, 1953. who got an assignment to write for The New Yorker about a young Hmong girl with epilepsy and her parents' difficulty dealing with the American medical system. The New Yorker turned down the piece, and so Fadiman turned it into a book, The Spirit Catches You and You Fall Down. He's also the author of a couple of collections of essays, At Large and At Small, writing about her childhood butterfly collection on the art of letter writing. And it was on this day in 1934, the U.S. Court of Appeals ruled that James Joyce's Ulysses was not obscene. It had been banned in this country in 1920. It sold very well on the black market, but James Joyce and his publisher couldn't make any money that way, so they had to fight the ban, and that required Random House to provoke the government into a new obscenity trial. In 1933, Random House imported a single version of the French edition of Ulysses. It came in on a boat in New York, and Random House made sure the U.S. Customs Inspector would find it and seize it. Random House and Joyce appealed, and the judge, John Woolsey, ruled that it was not pornographic. He wrote, "In respect of the recurrent emergence of the theme of sex in the minds of his characters, it must always be remembered that his locale was Celtic and his season spring." Here's a poem for today by Phyllis Hope entitled Cleaning the Bathroom. Cleaning the bathroom is humbling and good. Enamel and glass feel smoother than wood as the mind, barely thinking, goes passive. Meanwhile, the hand gliding easily over the tile or toilet or mirror finds tangible peace in the rhythm of rubbing, a kindly release, and the patience of porcelain fixtures can drain what's flashy or fancy in favor of plain. In style unpretentious, demeanor serene, the bathroom is basic, its function to clean. Phyllis Hope, Cleaning the Bathroom, from her collection Hello House, published by Fithian Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, produced by Nick Vedder, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. My next guest is here to tell us about an event that will be on Saturday, August 11th. It starts out from the Safeway parking lot at 9 in the morning, and it is called the Step Out Against Diabetes Fun Walk. So tell me, if you can, what this little event is about, Cynthia Nickerson.
Well, this event is put on by Bartlett Regional Hospital, Safeway, and the American Diabetes Association. And the main purpose of this walk is to raise awareness about diabetes and that physical activity is key to not only preventing diabetes, but also controlling diabetes.
So how long is the walk?
The walk is about 2.8 miles. We're going to be walking the Brotherhood Bridge Trail on Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll be starting at the Safeway parking lot and have people register, get signed in, go walk, and then we'll have prizes and some light, healthy snacks afterwards and bottled water, and we plan on having a whole lot of fun.
So it's out and back on the Brotherhood Bridge Trail.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, the one that goes along the side of the river there,
yes.
The paved side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we're hoping that families will come out and bring their kids and just enjoy being outside.
Mm-hmm. I have some questions about this kind of fundraising. There's a fee for walking in the parade, right?
Actually, there's not.
Oh, okay.
It's open to anyone. There's no cost, but if you want, you can develop a team or join a team and do some fundraising for the American Diabetes Association, but it's absolutely not necessary.
Okay, but there are people who are walking in these events around the country, and they're, like, sponsored. And the money is being collected.
Yes, they raise money.
So my question is, what happens to it?
Well, all the money goes to the American Diabetes Association, which is a huge national organization that helps. Well, their main purpose is to help people living with diabetes, but they also are a great source of research, funding research, and supporting people. You know, go to camp. Kids go to camp. and helping people like me, the local diabetes educator, keep up with the most current information about diabetes.
Well, here I am in a small room with a diabetes educator, so I have to know a little bit more about the disease. It seems to me that the public presence of diabetes has increased a great deal in the last several years. Is that because there's more of the disease or because we're more aware of it?
Well, I'd say a little bit of both, but I think mostly because diabetes is an epidemic around the world and especially in our country. I first started working in diabetes in 1999, and roughly about 7% of Americans had diabetes. Now, here we are 12 and a half years later since I started, and it's about 13%. So diabetes is skyrocketing.
Why is there an increase?
Well, there are many factors.
I mean, the population is larger.
Yes, the population is larger. But also, our citizens, our people are becoming more heavy and more overweight. And there is certainly a link between obesity and developing type 2 diabetes.
So I asked you ahead of the program if I know someone who eats a lot of sugar, and I was and you corrected me and said that that's really not what causes diabetes.
Correct. The good news is that no one can eat their way into having diabetes, but they can eat their way into becoming overweight or obese, and that is a risk factor for developing type 2 diabetes. If someone is eating too much sugar, it's certainly not the healthiest thing to do, but at the same time, if they're a thin person, they're less likely to get diabetes. Another big factor in developing diabetes is inactivity. Our country...
Inactivity.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. So we're not as active as we used to be. And that sedentary lifestyle can be a risk factor as well. The other factor going on with diabetes is there has to be a genetic component to develop type 2 diabetes, meaning somewhere in your family there has to be a gene that comes out and lends itself to type 2 diabetes. So, again, those risk factors can be being overweight or sedentary. We know that smoking is now a risk factor as well for diabetes. Among other things.
Cynthia, while you were talking, we were joined by your compatriot here. If you could move that microphone right over there so that you're... Yeah, good. Thank you. Okay. So, would you introduce yourself?
Hi. My name is Mansoor Al-Zaharna.
Okay. Well, welcome aboard, Mansoor. And are you involved in both the diabetes education program, or what brings you to us?
I'll come up with the other, the sport and eating healthy.
Oh, okay.
And exercising.
Ah, okay. So
Mansoor is a marathon runner who has raised thousands and thousands of dollars for the American Diabetes Association running in marathons all over the world.
And you'll be walking, I assume, on Saturday? Saturday.
Yes, we organize, me and Cynthia from the hospital, and we want everybody to come in and join us.
So can you slow down that much?
Absolutely. We actually just want to do it as a competitive. We want to be able to be educated about diabetes, and we just want them to come out and walk. So really, we don't want it to be as a race.
Can I ask why you got into doing marathon running to support diabetes education?
Yes. I used to live in Barrow, Alaska, and me and my wife moved here about a year ago. And the company I used to work for before, they called Alaska Commercial Company, and they did a lot of fundraisers for diabetes. And they asked if I'd be interested to run a marathon. And so I started doing my fundraiser. Then in the meantime, every time I asked somebody for a donation, they said, oh, I have diabetes, such and such, and my family have diabetes. So it got me more motivated and started getting really involved with diabetes. I don't have a diabetes, me or any of my family. Mm-hmm. So I just started doing out of my heart and helping people with diabetes awareness out of my goodness. So that's why I did it.
And how does your marathon running produce money for diabetes?
Yes. What I did is I asked for most company, and some people asked if they don't mind to donate money, and all the money was going to American Diabetes. And the company I worked for before, they were helping, they were paying for the, they said like you're supposed to reach $3,000, for example. And every time they asked for $3,000, I raised like $12,000. So I wasn't just want to reach my goal and stop. For example, last year we did over $22,000 for American Diabetes. And so my goal is to help with Cynthia as she's has all the knowledge and the information about nutrition and diabetes. I come in the other way to educate them on eating healthy, exercise, and that's what my role is.
Hmm. So if people want to participate in the fun walk or form a team like that, we have until Saturday to get this together. How do they go about doing that?
They can actually go to the American Diabetes Association website, Step Out Against Diabetes, or they can sign up at the race.
And do you have teams already formed at this point?
There are teams formed.
Any of them looking for members?
Absolutely.
So you know,
this is a great opportunity just to get out, get some activity, get some exercise, and enjoy being outdoors.
So if anyone wanted to get on the website, they could find the name of someone that they might want to contact to join their team and engage in the fundraising
our
process.
Group, our walk, we're known as the Juneau Stars. There's a walk in Anchorage, and we're here in Juneau.
Yeah, there's a big event coming up in Anchorage, I think, at Sullivan Arena on October 14th. Is that another walk in that area?
It is, yes.
It starts there and goes around the town or something like
mm-hmm.
that? Okay. And then are there other activities throughout the year other than this walk on Saturday, August 11th?
This is the first time we've ever done the Step Out Against Diabetes. I understand there have been walks previously for diabetes in the past, but this is the only one I've done. I've been here for 7 years now, or almost 7 years.
You said that your basically your career is educating people about diabetes. If someone wants to hear from you, if they would like you to present, how do they? What can they expect, and who are you trying to reach?
I'm trying to reach everyone. I think pretty much everybody knows someone or has a family member who has diabetes. What my goal is to educate people about how to live with diabetes, how to prevent some of the devastating consequences of uncontrolled diabetes. I'm also thrilled to work with people who think they are at risk for diabetes and help them learn how to prevent or at least delay developing type 2 diabetes.
So you'll work with individuals as well as groups?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I can be reached at the hospital.
Oh, okay. And just call the main hospital and ask for Cynthia?
That's correct.
Cynthia, last name?
Nickerson.
Nickerson. Okay, good. And the main phone number. Mansoor,
yes.
If someone is concerned that they might be borderline diabetic, what should they begin doing to offset that with exercise? What
first,
kinds of exercise are recommended?
First, I would start with walking, walking slowly.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, just build it up, like maybe walk for 10 minutes a little bit and see how far you can go. Then maybe next week or a couple of more days, 5 more minutes. Then when you start be able to walk for half an hour, then if you like to jog, what the usual do to starting jogging is like jog for 5 minutes, then walk 1 minute. So if you feel like you can walk more than 30 minutes or 1 hour, then if you would like to be jogging, so I would jog 5 minutes slow pace and walk 1 minute. Then keep repeating that slowly, then you will get better and better every time.
Now, we live in Juneau, Alaska, where it
correct.
Rains all the time.
Yes.
So the question is, are there indoor walking opportunities around Juneau?
Yes, there is a couple of them. First, there is the Wells Fargo building by the high school.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And then also there's the Alaska Club. The Wells Fargo building, it has dome inside and you can walk all around it. There has a little track.
Ooh.
Yeah, and it's upstairs.
Yeah, go ahead.
Then also a lot of people will walk at the malls before the stores open. That's a great way to get physical activity without being rained on.
And, I noticed the other day I was walking through the state office building. And there's actually a marked course inside the state office building. I saw some signs on stairwells and things like that saying turn here and so forth. So
there's no excuse. You can come out and walk, and when it's not raining in Juneau, you can just, enjoy it, jog a little bit, jog for 5 minutes, take a minute walk, and build it slowly, And then you'll be able to do next week half an hour and walk 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
We don't want people to do it right away because we don't want to get injured.
So the walk Saturday, if people just show up, that's fine. If they want to do more than that, they can go to a website or give you a call. Can you give us the contact information?
Absolutely. I can be contacted at Bartlett Regional Hospital. And my direct number is 796 8649. I'm more than happy to give information to anyone who's interested.
Wonderful. Okay, well, I wish you great success with the Step Out Against Diabetes Fun Walk, Saturday, August 11th, 2012. Assemble in the Safeway parking lot at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it's the Brotherhood Bridge Trail 2.9-mile walk. Mansoor, you're going to be out there leading the pack in true marathon style, right?
Yes. Okay. We want to welcome
Take them. It easy on them. Don't.
Thanks.
That means you'll have to slow down.
As a reminder, during whale watch season, NOAA fisheries ask you to keep your distance from endangered humpback whales. Federal law prohibits pursuit or approach within 100 yards. Boaters should operate at a slow, safe speed. Limit time with whales to 30 minutes or less, and avoid approaching when other vessels are near. To report a violation or distressed marine mammal, call NOAA Fisheries Hotline at 1-800-853-1964.
This is Bird Note. A colossal mass of snow thunders down a mountainside, hurling above it an immense cloud of powdery snow. Avalanches tend to follow historic channels down the face of a mountain, sweeping with them standing trees and boulders, while adjacent slopes remain clad in evergreens. Such natural snow courses are known as avalanche chutes. Despite the avalanche's destructive power, soil often remains along the avalanche chute, creating a new opening for pioneering vegetation. Grasses and sedges take root, as well as low shrubs like huckleberry, alder, and willow. A new zone of habitat takes form, habitat favored by diverse wildlife. Bears forage on ripe huckleberries in late summer. In the west, the shrubby cover of avalanche chutes attracts nesting fox sparrows and provides ideal habitat for MacGillivray's warblers. Hermit thrushes sing glistening notes atop tall fir trees nearby, then fly to the avalanche chute to forage. Look along mountainsides for the elongated vertical stripes that announce an avalanche chute. In autumn, the low shrubs there blaze with color, vibrant accents of red and gold amid the rocky slopes and the evergreens. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Updated weather forecast for tonight. Areas of fog, rain likely in the evening, scattered showers late. Lows around 53, southwest winds 5 miles per hour. Those will shift to the southeast this late this evening and overnight. And then Wednesday, we'll have areas of fog in the morning, scattered showers in the morning, rain likely in the afternoon, highs around 59, southeast winds 10 miles per hour. That patchy fog will continue into Wednesday night and Thursday. We'll have rain on Thursday. Thursday night, showers are likely. Friday, mostly cloudy. Chance of showers Friday night through Sunday. The forecast is for mostly cloudy, and the word rain does not appear in the weekend forecast. So we might be looking down the barrel at a wonderful weekend, Juno style. Is provided by the group that played at Camp Damp this weekend, the dance round dance English dancing festival that's held out at the Methodist camp each year. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas, and we also broadcast on translators throughout the area. In the valley in Auk Bay, you can tune to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we're on K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9, and in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, KTOO has a signal on 89.9 megahertz on K210AS. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau. We're on digital channel 871. KRNN is on digital channel 872, and KXLL is on 873. And we also stream continuously at www.ktoo.org.